In the new book, Cows Save the Planet, journalist Judith Schwartz looks at soil as a crucible for our many overlapping environmental, economic, and social crises. She reveals that for many of these problems, climate change, biodiversity loss, droughts, floods, wildfires, rural poverty, malnutrition, and obesity, there are positive alternative scenarios to the degradation and devastation that we face. In each case, our ability to turn these crises into opportunities depends on how we treat the soil. Drawing on the work of thinkers and doers, as well as scientists and institutional whistleblowers from around the world, Judith Schwartz challenges much of the conventional thinking about global warming and other problems. She says that the book is a primer on soil's pivotal role in our ecology and economy, a call to action, and an antidote to the despair that environmental news so often leaves us with. It's a great pleasure to welcome Judith Schwartz to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, I'm happy to be here.
It is a delight to have you here. What brought you to look at this? Well, first of all, let's talk about the title. So, because you think it's a great title to play with, that cows save the planet, and it all gets down to the issue of soil. And what brought you to the earth?
Ah, well, I have to say that I'm kind of an unlikely candidate for talking about and speaking up for the soil because I'm not a scientist, but terribly an outdoor person. What happened was I came to it through, strangely enough, through economics. Several years ago, when the economic downturn happened, I started asking some questions like, what is money? What is wealth? Which led me to explore new economics, which is the notion that our economy should be serving people and the planet, as opposed to the other way around, which is how it often seems today. So I started looking at environmental economics and saw the disconnect between how we look at the earth and what's going on with the natural world and our financial world. And at a conference, so that was sitting in my head, just I was really kind of, that tension was really very present for me. And then I was at a conference and someone said a fact that kind of hit me over the head. And that was that over time, more CO2 has gone into the atmosphere from agricultural practices compared to the burning of fossil fuels. And I thought, wow, that's really interesting. How come all we ever hear about is the burning of fossil fuels? And considering that we're not really getting very far in managing those, maybe we should look at agriculture and soil.
Because so much of the discussion that we have about the state of our environment has to do with air, has to do with it's in the sky. We look up. And you're making the point of, yeah, okay, but what are we standing on?
That's right. That for us, when we talk about climate change, it's always a sky thing. But as you say, I make the point, it's also a ground thing. And we don't really think about soil. We pave over it. We walk over it. We more and more deplete it by our agricultural practices. But when you think about it, all of our key ecological cycles, biophysical cycles, move through the soil. So we're talking about the energy cycle, meaning the solar cycle, the mineral nutrient cycle, the carbon cycle, and the water cycle. So what I got really excited about, I know talking about these, you know, this kind of science class type speak doesn't sound very exciting, but what I got excited about is that we can intervene by way of the soil with any of these cycles and thereby begin to restore them.
So when we think of the soil and its many roles, obviously one being that of a filter. So anything that comes down is then filtered through that soil, which obviously impacts anything that's going to come up.
That's right. That's right. That's one of soil's many functions. Yes.
So keeping that pure, keeping that clean, and making sure that process is unencumbered is something that I don't think we haven't had a good discussion about that.
No, we haven't at all. And also in terms of the CO2 question, as I said, that we're always talking about. But the thing is that anytime you leave soil bare, or you plow it, or you interfere with it in some way, there's carbon in the soil, and that's the main component of organic matter, which, as any gardener knows, that's the stuff that you want to keep your soil fertile. Anyway, there's carbon in the soil, and whenever you're interfering with it, or it dries out, or it's uncovered, then that carbon oxidizes and combines with oxygen, and that's where a good chunk of our CO2 excess comes from. But why that's important is that you can do the opposite. You can bring carbon back into the soil. And once you do that, you're also hitting on so many other problems.
You write in the book about peak soil, not peak oil, peak soil.
Right, right. I was at a talk a couple of weeks ago when someone said, actually, Alan Savory, the fellow who lent me that title, Cows Save the Planet, which I guess we'll get to in a second.
Yes. But you're not getting away without that conversation.
Okay. He said that for every human on this planet, about 4 tons of soil is degraded or basically spent, because we're not using enough regenerative agricultural practices.
When you write in the book about livestock and its effect on the soil, and you have a section in the book that is titled "Too Many Animals or Not Enough." So where are we? I mean, it kind of depends what's going on, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So cattle have gotten a bad rap. There are people that say that global warming is caused virtually solely by livestock. So here is the thing. Whenever you have animals on the land, those animals are having an impact on that land. And that can be a positive or a negative impact, depending on how those animals are managed. So if you have animals confined in feedlots, then their waste going into lagoons, that is producing methane. If you have animals that cattle or that could be that are left to go where they want to go, and of course they're going to go for the most appealing forage, they're going to go down to the water, the edge of the water, they're going to be overgrazing some areas, and there might be some areas that are getting undergrazed. And see, about the, you mentioned the numbers, that overgrazing is a problem, but also undergrazing is a problem too, because the land kind of stagnates without the animal impact.
So you live in Vermont?
Yes, I do.
It is a cow-friendly environment in Vermont, as it is in upstate New York, and as it is in the neighboring counties of New York and Massachusetts. Do we have it right?
Wow, that's a really, really interesting question. I can say that we don't have it wrong, but for specific reasons. The power of livestock to restore land is most significant in what are termed brittle environments. That means areas that are seasonably dry. So they have a rainy season and a dry season. So what that means is that the moisture in the soil needs to last from the end of the rainy season through to the beginning of the next rainy season. Okay, so that's when you really need all the processes, the behavior of animals on the land. But Vermont and all of this area is a moisture area. So that means that the land isn't going to degrade in the same way. That doesn't mean that land isn't degrading, and that doesn't mean that our farms everyone who's working on the land and has livestock, doesn't mean that we couldn't be doing it better, because I imagine that we could be building more soil carbon, etc. But we can get away with messing it up a lot more than people in drier areas.
You have a chapter in the book called The Return of Lost Water, and you make the statement, which is absolutely true. Everyone's got similar stories these days. The heat waves are hotter, the hurricanes heavier, the lack of snow more lacking. The extreme and unusual, what weather pros called 100-year events, meaning that they come along once in a century, are now extreme yet usual. So the impact that that has on the soil, and what you mean ultimately by lost water.
Aha. Okay. Researching this chapter, the material for this chapter, blew me away more than any of the research that I've done. Okay. And here's the thing, that when we talk about the connection between climate change and water, what we usually hear about is that climate change will put added stress on our water supplies. And there are even companies that are cornering the market on water in advance, in anticipation of that. Okay, now that dynamic is true. But what we don't talk about is the effect of water, of the water cycle on climate, and how we can use the water cycle to restore our climate and to moderate our climate. And basically, when I use the phrase the return of lost water, basically we have been draining the water from our landscapes. We've been paving over land. I mean, that's happening around the world really, really at an incredibly rapid pace. In our urban areas, we just sluice water away. Water is an inconvenience. We've been deforest. We've been cutting down forests, and forests store water. And we've been doing big, large-scale agriculture in a way that is just using water without holding it in the soil. So it's about bringing water into the soil, holding it on the land, because once you do that, you have the transpiration. That was the key that kind of blew me away, is that the when you've got moist ground and plants growing on it, you've got a cooling effect, and you've got the small water cycle, which is keeping the soil moist. It is growing plants, moving through plants, and evaporating and back down, keeping our precipitation cycle moderate, and keeping the life in the soil, which is also significant, alive. Because when land dries out, then the soil microbiology, which is really important to our food supply and to all the other dynamics that we're talking about, then I forget what I said. If when the land dries out,
yeah,
then we lose that, and that's a key part of land degradation, desertification, growing heat plates, which we're getting more and more of across the country.
So the retention is so important.
That's right.
It's a fascinating book, and there are so many important issues that you discuss in it. Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I do urge people to take a look and read more. It is Cows Save the Planet and Other Improbable Ways of Restoring Soil to Heal the Earth. And Judith Schwartz, it's a great pleasure to have you on the program. I wish you all the luck in the world in your work.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
A delight to have you here. Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Cows Save the Planet, is published by Chelsea Green. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.